Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 104.
It starts with that ritual, doesn't it?
Ugh, the life-prolonging ritual. That famous attempt to, well, bargain with the heavens.
Which goes wrong. Spectacularly wrong.
Thanks to Weyon, his own general just stumbles in at the worst possible moment.
Knocks over the main lamp, right? The crucial one.
Yep. And just like that, the ritual's hope is extinguished. Jiang Wei is furious, ready to execute Weyon on the spot.
For ruining the last chance. Sacrilege, really.
But Kong Ming stops him. And this is key. He just accepts it. Says something like, this is my destiny to end, not Wen Chang's fault.
Wow. So no more hoping for miracles.
Exactly. The focus snaps instantly from, you know, maybe divine intervention straight back to pure calculated human planning. Destiny failed him, so strategy has to take over.
Okay, so destiny's set. But even dying, the military commander in him surfaces immediately.
Absolutely. Sima Yi, across the battlefield, he's always watching, always cautious. He senses something might be up.
So he sends out a probe, a reconnaissance attack.
That's right. Led by Shai Huba, just testing the lines, seeing if there's weakness.
And Kong Ming, despite being incredibly ill, the text says vomiting blood.
Literally. But his first order isn't to his most trusted lieutenant.
No. He tells Weyan to handle it. The guy who just ruined his ritual.
Which is strategically brilliant even then. He's using Weyan, the potential traitor, the guy Sima Yi knows is a capable general.
Ah, so it makes Sima Yi think everything's still normal, still strong.
Exactly. Keep up the facade. And Weyan does the job, pushes them back hard.
Proving Shu is still a threat. So he's managing the external enemy and the internal threat with one move.
Killing two birds with one stone right before he shifts focus, because he knows the campaign itself is basically over now.
Right. The immediate battle is handled, but the bigger picture, his legacy.
Precisely. The knowledge has to survive. That becomes paramount.
And this is where Jiang Wei comes in.
Yes. Kong Ming picks him as his sole intellectual successor. He apparently lamented that nobody else quite had the breadth of understanding required.
And we're not just talking about a few scrolls here. This was substantial.
Oh, huge. 24 chapters, the source says. His life's work, really.
What was in them? Was it all military tactics?
Well, some, yes. But that wasn't the main thrust, interestingly. It was heavily focused on governance.
Governance, like how to run the state.
Exactly. Things called the 8 services, 7 warnings, 6 fears, 5 worries. Principles for administration, for ethical leadership.
So he saw building a stable, well-run state as his most important legacy, more than the battles.
It seems that way. He was handing over the instruction manual for a sustainable moral government. He knew good bureaucracy would outlast any general.
That's a really powerful insight into his priorities at the end.
It is, but he didn't totally neglect the hardware either.
Ah, the inventions. The crossbows.
The famous connected crossbow, yes. He passed the diagrams, the blueprints, to Jiang Wei.
This wasn't just a weapon. It was a core piece of Shu's military tech advantage.
Absolutely. Giving it to one trusted person was like handing over the keys to future security, ensuring that edge wasn't lost.
Okay, so he's securing the software, the governance principles, and the hardware of the tech.
Mm-hmm.
But then he gives Jiang Wei this really specific, kind of chilling warning.
Yeah, it's almost prophetic. He points to a specific geographical weakness.
Yinping.
Yinping, exactly. A treacherous, mountainous area. Kong Ming warns Jiang Wei, though treacherous, it will inevitably be lost.
He saw it as a future point of failure, even though it was hard to traverse.
He understood vulnerability. He's basically telling Jiang Wei, look, you can secure the main roads, but the enemy will eventually find the weak point, the back door, and we aren't set up to hold that forever. It's quite fatalistic.
So the knowledge transfer is about the long term. Immediate survival hinges on the retreat, and that means dealing with Weyan.
The biggest internal threat, Kong Ming knew. The text implies he basically knew Weyan was going to cause trouble, maybe even rubble, once he was gone.
How do you neutralize your own top general while you're on your deathbed, without causing chaos?
Cold calculation, pure preemption. First, keep him feeling important. Let him win that skirmish against Shao Huba.
Right, keep him busy feeling valued.
Then set the traps, secretly. Two parts to this.
Okay.
First, he pulls Ma Dai aside, whispers specific instructions. We don't know exactly what, but it's clear Ma Dai has a secret countermission.
A contingency plan involving Ma Dai.
Got it.
Second, and this is classic Kong Ming theater, he gives Yang Yi, the administrator, a sealed brocade pouch, a Jinnang.
A secret pouch. What was in it?
He tells Yang Yi only to open it if and when Weyan actually rebels. and he promises the pouch contains the name of the person who will execute Wayan.
He's literally scripting the counter coup from his deathbed. That's audacious.
It's incredible. He's not just predicting the betrayal, he's assigning the roles to stop it.
But the risk. The whole army's safety relies on this intricate deception working. What if Ma Dai fails? What if Yang Yi opens the pouch too early or too late?
Huge risks, but necessary. And it all ties into the other big deception, fooling Sima Yi during the retreat itself.
Right, because if Sima Yi realizes Kongming is dead, he'll attack immediately.
Definitely. So Kongming designs the retreat purely around psychological warfare. Rule number one, absolute silence about his death.
Yang Yi was told no mourning, no public grief.
Not a single cry. Keep up appearances at all costs.
And then the really strange part, the handling of his body.
Yes. The macabre theater, as you called it. He gives very specific instructions.
Place the corpse upright in a large shrine, seated.
With 7 grains of rice in the mouth and a lamp burning brightly at his feet.
Okay, that sounds like superstition, maybe some kind of ritual magic.
It was framed that way. The idea was to keep his general star from falling immediately, to make it seem like his spirit was still guarding the army.
So it's aimed at Sima Yi's unbeliefs. Sima Yi watched the stars.
Deeply. He was known for astrology. If Kongming's star didn't fall, Sima Yi would hesitate. He'd think, wait, maybe he's not dead. Or maybe his spirit is still potent.
It buys time. Crucial time for the army to pull back.
Exactly. That slow retreat, camp by camp, very orderly, with Jiang Wei commanding the rear guard, it maximizes the value of that bot time.
But even Kongming knew Sima Yi might eventually push.
Yeah.
Right? He had a final bluff ready.
The final, maybe the most famous piece of psychological warfare, the wooden statue.
The statue, right? If Sima Yi pursues...
Yang Yi was instructed to form up the troops for battle, then dramatically push out a chariot.
Daring.
A life-sized wooden statue of Kongming carved beforehand, dressed in his command robes.
Just roll out a wooden dummy.
And Kongming predicted exactly what would happen. Sima Yu, seeing his nemesis suddenly appear, seemingly alive and ready for battle,
would panic, assume the reports of his death were a trick,
and flee, which is exactly what happened, according to the story.
Leading to that famous line, a dead Zhuge scares away a living Sima.
It worked. It shows his reputation. His psychological hold over his rival was itself a weapon.
Okay, we've covered the intricate plans, the deception, but let's just take a moment for the man himself, his very last hours.
Yeah, moving from the grand strategist back to the human being, there's a really poignant moment described.
The final tour.
Yes. He asks to be carried in a small cart. He wants to see his camps, his army, one last time.
It's incredibly sad. The text says he felt the autumn chill.
Looked over everything he'd built, the army he'd led for so long.
He just says, never again will I face the enemy in battle. Alas, the end is here.
It's a rare flash of raw emotion from someone known for, you know, almost superhuman control.
And that personal moment seems to lead straight into his final political act.
His last memorial to the Emperor Lu Shan, his final will, essentially.
And it contains advice, right?
Yeah.
Standard stuff about being a good ruler.
Well, yes, but important. Seek purity of heart, be frugal, love the people, promote the good officials, reject the corrupt ones. It's him setting the moral compass for whoever comes next.
But the most striking part of that memorial, for me at least, is the detail about his personal finances.
Ah, yes. That's crucial. Why right at the end does he list his property?
Exactly. Yeah. Fate of the kingdom hanging in the balance, and he's talking about mulberry trees.
He lists it all. 800 mulberry trees, 15 king of, quote, thin land. Pretty modest for a chancellor.
And he stresses that when he dies, there'll be nothing extra. No surplus silk inside, no leftover wealth outside.
This wasn't just personal justification. It was a massive political statement.
How so?
It was about integrity, setting the ultimate ethical standard. He was proving beyond any doubt that he hadn't profited from his immense power.
So his successors could point to him as the example. Lead with that same morality.
Precisely. He secured his moral legacy to ensure his intellectual legacy, all those writings on good governance, would actually be trusted and followed. His honesty was a political tool.
That makes so much sense. His personal integrity underpins the whole structure he's leaving behind.
And right as he's finishing this, solidifying his moral authority.
The official, Mi Fu, rushes back in. He'd been sent to the capital and returned.
Realizing he forgot the most critical question.
The succession. Who takes over after Kongming?
Yes. And Kongming, literally in his final breaths, manages to answer. Partially.
He names the first successor.
Jiang Wan, known as Jiang Gongyan, a civilian and administrator, seen as steady, reliable.
Okay. And the second?
Fei Yi. Fei Wenwei, another skilled administrator, good at diplomacy too.
So, two administrators back to back. Interesting choice, not a military figure first.
Reflects his focus on stability and governance perhaps, but then?
Li Fu asks, and after Fei Yi, who's third?
Silence. Kong Ming gives no answer. He dies right then.
At 54, leaving that final piece of the puzzle blank.
And the immediate aftermath, the reaction to his death, really underscores how vital he was, even to those he'd punished.
The sources mentioned two specific cases, right? Liao Li.
Yeah, an official Kong Ming had banished. When he hears the news, he weeps, declares something like, I shall end up wearing left-collared garments.
Meaning he'd become a barbarian, lose his place in civilized society.
Essentially, yes. He realized that Kong Ming, even in his severity, represented the order and structure of Han civilization that kept chaos at bay. Without him, Liao Li feared regression.
And the other one, Lian.
Another official Kong Ming had demoted, quite severely. He also broke down.
But his reaction was different.
He apparently got sick from grief and died soon after. His reasoning was that he always hoped Kong Ming might eventually recognize his repentance and reinstate him.
But with Kong Ming gone,
he knew no one else would have the authority or perhaps the inclination to overturn Kong Ming's judgment. His hope for rehabilitation died with the chancellor. Sima Yi had been stuck in this stalemate, just waiting, patiently waiting for some kind of break.
For months, yeah.
And the source tells us, one night, he's watching the stars, and he sees something. Something that changes everything.
It's this incredible celestial sign. He sees a huge red star. The text specifically says it had a radiance that had horns, Guang Mengyu Jiao.
Horns, right.
And it streams across the sky, northeast to southwest, crashes right into the Shu camp. And apparently it rose twice and even made a sound.
Wow. Okay, so if you're a general back then, steeped in divination, believing the stars reflect earthly events, this isn't just some random meteor.
No, not at all. It's a direct message.
Yeah.
And Sima Yi gets it instantly.
What's his reaction?
Immediate. Absolute. Kong Ming is dead. Just like that.
Exactly.
Exactly. The star's path, its appearance, it points straight to the fall of the enemy commander. So Sima Yi orders the Wei army, get ready, we're pursuing. Now, this is the moment he's been waiting for.
Right, his whole career building to this, but then he hesitates. He pulls back.
Yeah, he hits the brakes.
This is what's so fascinating about their rivalry. He's convinced Zhu Jilang is dead, stars confirmed it, but he holds back the main force. Why?
Caution. Deep, deep caution. Born from years of dealing with Zhu Jilang's tricks. He suspects it might be an illusion.
Yeah.
He knew Zhu Jiang was rumored to use these Ding Six Jia methods. Now, for listeners, this isn't just standard military feints. It's like ancient complex arts of divination, illusion, maybe even something more esoteric.
So not just worried about a simple ambush. He's worried about some kind of, magical trap set by a dying genius.
Precisely. The fear is that Zhu Jiang is weaponizing his own death or the appearance of his death to lure the Wei army into a devastating trap. It's next level paranoia.
We're sandball, given their history.
So very wisely, Sima Yi holds back the main army. He sends only a small, fast scouting group. General Xie Huba, just a few dozen riders, to go quietly check out the Wuzhang plains.
That initial doubt, that caution, it turns out to be crucial later on.
Absolutely. It saves him.
So while Sima Yi is outside the camp, wrestling with his suspicions inside the Shu camp, things are already falling apart before Sima Yi even makes a move. And it all centers on General Wei Yan.
Yeah, the story sets this up perfectly with a really bad omen. Wei Yan, who's one of Shu's top frontline generals, a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
He has this dream. He wakes up, sees two horns growing out of his own head.
Okay, that sounds alarming. He asks an advisor, Zhao Ji, what it means.
He does. And this is where the, let's say, political games begin. Zhao Ji gives Wei Yan the public interpretation. Very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Compares the horns to, mythical beasts like the Kailan. Says it means promotion, ascension.
And Wei Yan, being ambitious.
He loves it. He's thrilled.
But that's not the real meaning, is it?
Not according to Zhao Ji himself.
Right.
Privately, he tells another official, Fei Yi, the truth. He breaks down the Chinese character for horn, Zhao. It's made up of the characters for knife, Dao, and use.
Knife, use?
So the knife used on the head. Tu Shang Yang Dao. Huh. Basically a death sentence. Extremely ominous.
Wow. And this interpretation comes just as the news breaks internally.
Exactly. Fei Yi finds Wei Yan and tells him the prime minister, Zhu Jilang, died the previous night, third watch. And he relays Zhu Jilang's final secret order. Wei Yan is to command the rear guard, the Duan Hao, during a slow, quiet retreat. Keep the death totally secret.
How does Wei Yan take that?
He explodes, furious. He flat out refuses. And it's all about rank and respect. Wei Yan points out his titles. Front general, Southern Zhang Marquis, he's a top military commander.
Right.
He refuses point blank to take orders from Yang Yi, who he dismisses as just a mere clerk, a changshi, an administrator, someone who pushes paper, not troops.
So he sees it as an insult. He thinks he should be leading the attack, maybe finish off Sima Yi, not handling logistics for a retreat and a funeral.
Precisely. And this defiance, it confirms Zhuge Liang's final fear. The prime minister had apparently anticipated this exact problem.
He left secret instructions for Yang Yi.
He did. Zhuge Liang had warned Yang Yi that Wei Yan was prone to treachery by Yu Yixi, that he harbored, let's say, alternative ambitions. So the whole retreat plan was designed with this in mind. It was a defense against Wei Yan as much as Sima Yi.
Clever. So Yang Yi, the clerk, suddenly has the authority.
He has the military seal.
Yeah.
And he has Jiang Wei, another trusted general, designated as the actual rear guard. They just quietly start the retreat following Zhuge Liang's real plan.
Leaving Wei Yan basically fuming and out of the loop.
Until he realizes he's been tricked, played by the mere scholar, as he calls Yang Yi. Then he openly rebels. He takes his own faction, Ma Dai supports him, and they actually turn south to attack the main Shu force, trying to seize control.
Incredible. So just as Sima Yi is finally deciding to move, the Shu state is effectively fighting a civil war during its own retreat.
A war on two fronts. Sima Yi closing in from the outside, Wei Yan attacking from within. It's chaos.
Okay, so the stage is set for this incredible final act. Back in the Wei camp, Xia Hu Ba returns. What's the news?
He confirms it. The Shu camp is empty. Abandoned. That's it for Sima Yi's caution.
He's convinced now.
100%. Kongming is truly dead. Kongming Jensi may be feeling a bit sheepish about hesitating before.
Yeah, probably.
He throws caution completely to the wind, personally leads the pursuit, takes his sons, Sima Shi and Sima Zhao, with him. This is his chance to crush the retreating Shu army before they can escape back to safety.
He pushes his forces hard, chasing them. They see the Shu columns moving slowly ahead.
They're gaining on them, rushing out of the abandoned camp, down towards the foothills, and then it happens.
The trap springs.
Terror. Pure psychological terror. Suddenly a cannon fires. A massive explosion echoes. The Shu banners ahead, they whip around, and the main flag unfurls, bearing that dreaded title.
I'm Prime Minister Wuxia Marquis Zhuge Liang.
Yes. The ultimate symbol of his authority. Yeah. And there, sitting in that famous four-wheeled carriage, is the man himself.
Zhuge Liang, or the image of him.
The image, perfectly crafted. The silk turban, the feather fan, the crane cloak, Longjin Yushan, He Chang Zhao Tao, everything Sima Yi knew and feared. The master of illusion.
And Sima Yi.
He just breaks, completely loses it, screams, Kong Ming is still alive, I've fallen into his trap.
The fear is that powerful.
Overwhelming. It triggers instant panic. He orders a full retreat, not strategic, just run. His disciplined Wei soldiers, they just dissolve into chaos, dropping weapons, armor, trampling each other just to get away.
Fleeing from a ghost, essentially.
Fleeing from the idea of Zhuge Liang. They run for maybe 50 lei, and that's about 20 miles, before his generals manage to stop him, get him under control.
And the first thing he says, it's incredible.
It really is. He catches his breath, runs his hand over his head, and asks frantically, do I still have my head?
Wei Yu Tufu?
Wow. Do I still have my head?
That one question tells you everything. It's the ultimate admission of psychological defeat. He wasn't just scared of losing a battle. He was utterly convinced this was a personal trap designed specifically to kill or capture him. Zhuge Liang wasn't just a tactical opponent. He induced existential dread.
Exactly. That's the level of terror Zhuge Liang weaponized, even in death.
And what's fascinating is the fear doesn't just vanish when he finds out the truth, does it?
Not immediately. It takes days. Local villagers eventually tell Sima Yi's men, yeah, the Shu army retreated, but there was loud mourning, white flags everywhere.
Oh.
Kong Ming was definitely dead.
And the figure in the carriage.
A wooden statue. A Muren, carved to look exactly like him. A final brilliant deception.
What does Sima Yi say then?
He just sighs, full of this grudging respect. I could predict his life, but not his death.
And that leads directly to that famous saying, doesn't it?
Instantly. A dead Zhuge could chase away a living Sima Yi. Sizu Ganingzu Shang Zonda. Zhongda being Sima Yi's style name, it perfectly captures the event. Du Yiling won his last battle after he died.
That proverb really cemented his legendary status.
And Sima Yi's admiration continues. He gives up the chase near Red Bank Slope. He goes back and actually studies the layout of Zugliang's abandoned camps.
What does he find?
Order. Method. Zheng Jing Yufo, he says. Regular and methodological. Even in retreat, the planning was immaculate, and he praises him openly. This is truly a unique talent under heaven. Xitian Xie Kikaye, high praise from your greatest rival.
So Sima Yu secures the region, heads back to Chang'an, knowing his biggest adversary is gone for good. Meanwhile, the Shu army, they finally make it towards the pass.
Yes, led by Yang Yi and Jiang Wei. They can finally drop the secrecy. They hold the official mourning ceremonies. The grief is immense. The text even mentions soldiers literally crying themselves to death.
Unbelievable grief. And they're exhausted and they've lost their leader. They just survived Wei Yan's mutiny.
And now they have to retreat through the final most dangerous part. The stack path. The Zangadaoku. You have to picture this. It's a narrow, winding road built on wooden planks bolted into the cliff faces. Treacherous.
A total choke point. The worst place to be ambushed.
Exactly. And that's right where the source leaves us. They enter this path, and suddenly, fire ahead, shouting. An unknown force is blocking their only way out, their escape route back to Shu territory.
What a cliffhanger.